Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This episode of Know How is brought to you by IT Pro TV, flexible and entertaining training for your IT career. Visit itpro.tv/knowhow and use the code KNOWHOW30 to get a free 7-day trial and 30% off a monthly membership for the lifetime of your active subscription. And by Ring. Ring's alarm security kit is a smarter way to protect your entire home. Go to ring.com/knowhow to learn how you can get whole home security for only $10 per month.
Today on Know How,
Flo's fragmentation frustration. Welcome to Know How. This is a show where we talk about IoT, Internet of All the Things.
With I-O-N, Florence Ion, that's me.
Yes. I have no IoT.
I'm sorry. It's just yeah. I've been making puns out of my name my entire life.
That's
so
good.
I just kind of lean into it.
Yeah. I'm Megan Maroney. Sometimes people call me Megan Moron for I don't know why.
That's mean. I call you M&M.
Yeah, it's good. Today we're going to talk about Flo's fragmentation.
Not actually just mine, but we want to do triple alliteration. Mm-hmm. But Megan and I, we talk a lot about the different ecosystems on the show, and we talk a lot about the things that make us really frustrated about these ecosystems. So that's what we're going to talk about today.
Mm-hmm. And we have a guest.
Not just one guest.
We have two guests.
We have two guests.
Yes, yes, we do.
All right, so we are here with Mike Soucy from Google. Senior Product Marketing Manager. Sorry, Mike, I wanted to make sure that I got your last name right there. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. Follow your show, really exciting stuff you talk about, so I'm very happy to.
Yay, okay, well, if you've been following us, then you know all season long, Meg and I have been talking about all the different ecosystems that we live with in our house and kind of the way that all these different things work with one another. And so we really wanted to talk to you about the Nest trajectory in particular, especially because we've got Google Thread running through that. And I think some of our audience members might be wondering, what is the difference between that Google Thread? How does it keep everything interlaced in the Nest ecosystem? And I personally would like to know, you know, why you guys chose this particular standard. So I guess, want to kick it off? Want to kick off some questions?
Yeah, sure. You know, I think the one thing to kind of note, right, is that Google acquired Nest back in 2014. For the last 4 years, we've been running independently, and essentially Google was a sister company where we'd collaborate. Back in February of 2018, we actually merged Nest into the Google Home division. So we're actually in that process of merging, realizing that between Google products and Voice Assistant, along with Nest products, really addressing energy, safety, and security, that really we had an incredible portfolio of products that we could work for integration of our products, let alone really working with outside third-party products and ecosystems and bring them in to really deliver unparalleled experiences at the end of the day for the consumers.
Right. So you have talked a lot about how a smart home can't truly be smart unless all those things are talking to each other. So I wanted to get a little more from you on Google Thread. I read a little bit about it being related to the Qualcomm spec. Correct me if I'm wrong there. And I was just wondering if you could just explain that spec a little bit, kind of where it came from and how it relates to the Zigbee and Z-Wave specs that exist.
Yeah, so, you know, I think it's important to understand that, like, Zigbee and Z-Wave have been protocols around the industry for over, like, literally the last 10 or 15 years. And a lot of the protocols, those protocols have been run on big servers. You know, so each one kind of takes a different shape to solve different problems. And if you kind of look inside, you'll find are based on, you know, CPU, RAM, and power. And so a lot of those protocols weren't addressed for the nuances of today's connected home, which are really much smaller chips. That's one of the constraints that I think the existing protocols and paradigms have been challenged with. We looked at the existing protocols from Zigbee, Z-Wave, Insteon, 933, and realized that the protocols out there weren't really addressing the issues that were important for us. And those are really centered around three or four different things. Number one is security. So knowing, you know, Google and Nest have to take security as a number one priority. Security was kind of the top of the list. The second thing is the ability to easily join a network. So device provisioning, getting it onboarded is another criteria. A third one is power constraints. So how can we reduce the communication that would interrupt back quickly, right? So, and then, you know, lastly is really making sure, again, that it works with a wide variety of products. So we support the Thread and via protocol supports over 250 devices in the home. So, you know, 4 or 5 years ago when we were looking at that, we looked at all the protocols and realized there wasn't anything out there. So, you know, Nest was a founding member, and then that became something that is a nonprofit organization that is an open protocol, but we use it specifically on our own products as well today. And I think there's over 200 companies that have joined the Thread group, and you know, it's really taken off. Actually, as a very secure protocol that is very efficient and you know, long-lasting battery.
So Apple recently joined the Thread group. What did you make of that?
I thought that was great. It's a validation of the technology. Again, this is going on 4 years. Thread.org is an open source, you know, Thread community. And to me, to have such another big player join Thread Group, you know, validates the technology. And at the end of the day, you know, there's other companies that have done that. Samsung and SmartThings, and the old CEO of SmartThings really praised what we were doing with Thread and that there was a need in the industry. So to me, the announcement with Apple is a positive thing for both Thread and the industry as a whole.
So I know you were at Nest before they were bought by Google. Was there some concern when you were acquired of this fragmentation problem, like being owned by one of the big players?
From a Nest perspective?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there was a concern. There's deep respect for Google and the brand, right? And, you know, if you kind of look at Google's background in search and, you know, developer platform, you know, and they've only been in the hardware space outside of the phone space for the last 2 years. So when you start talking about Google Home products with Google Voice and, you know, the speakers and different things like that, it's only been a couple of years. And so what Nest was able to bring to Google was really a hardware discipline. You know, Tony Fadell and Matt Rogers really came out of building incredible hardware that is beautiful, that consumers want to put on their walls. And, you know, merging that with Google software platform and really working collaboratively, I think it's kind of a great marriage. And really, this is just the beginning. And I think, again, earlier, as I kind of painted the different categories in the home that both Nest products and Google products offer, and then adding software on top of that, let alone we're at the tip of the iceberg of really leaning into kind of AI, machine learning, habitual pattern recognition, natural language, all of these things to really create a really kind of unparalleled different experience for the consumer. So it's really about coming together with our strengths of hardware, software, and kind of this AI a bit to really bring on new experiences that the consumer will just enjoy, where the technology hopefully fades into the background, and yet your home truly automates around the comings and goings of the family, if you will.
So what do the Nest devices need to kind of work interchangeably with other devices in terms of the spec that we were sort of talking about earlier?
Yeah, so all of Nest products essentially have three different communication protocols. Wi-Fi, mm-hmm. Which is the ability to talk to the cloud. There's Thread and Weave for device-to-device communication. And then we also use Bluetooth, mostly for provisioning and getting a new product onboarded. Sometimes we use NFC in certain cases, but those are our primary three protocols. We also have the Works with Nest ecosystem.
Right.
There's over 40,000 developers in the ecosystem that have signed up for Works with Nest, from garage startups to Fortune 100 companies. And we've done, you know, pretty incredible partnerships with these companies. Most of those integrations use a cloud-to-cloud integration. Mm-hmm. So, you know, a third party would have their own device that talks to the cloud, their cloud talks to ours, and ours down to our devices, and vice versa. And that's a majority of the integration. Last year, we did a collaborative product build with Yale Locks, where we did the Nest Yale Lock. That was the first third-party product that we actually enabled to have the Weave technology in there. So the Yale Lock actually speaks Thread and Weave directly to our products and infrastructure, which eliminates the need to hop to the cloud, essentially. So, you know, that's a beginning of, I think, many partnerships to come. You know, and while we essentially serve six different kind of categories across Nest and Google products, the home is vast, and there's probably about 15 to 25 major categories, and we don't plan on trying to solve for every category in the home. What we've done is really kind of chosen our verticals and our disciplines, and then we're partnering with those other third-party device manufacturers at different levels, you know, whether it's a Nest Yale Lock collaborative effort or all the way down to a cloud-to-cloud integration or just a third-party you know, manufacturer that wants to join the program. It's free. And then they ask for a client review. We do a certification. Next thing you know, they're part of our ecosystem. So it's really, it's quite broad.
So I wanted to ask about that certification, actually, because I've spent the last year basically looking through every DIY security system there is out there. And I noticed a lot of them integrate with Nest in addition to the individual Nest Secure that exists. So what does a third party need to be able to work harmoniously within the Nest ecosystem?
They really need cloud to cloud. So they have to have a cloud infrastructure. And then works with Nest. You essentially sign up for the program. You get access to individual device APIs. So the developer can download those. And we expose different controls of our products to those developers. So many of the developers tap into our Home and Away Assist feature. So it started way back with the Nest thermostat. When you install it, we understood when you're home or away. And there's so many meaningful actions that we can take on behalf of the consumer when we know whether you're occupying the home or whether you're away. And so many, many manufacturers, you know, do integrations, whether it's to reduce energy and cost savings by turning off lights, or let's say, we've done integrations actually if you forget to close your garage door. So we have an integration with Chamberlain garage door opener. If it senses that you're away from home, it'll give you an alert saying, you know, you may want to check to see if your garage door is open or closed, and you can close it remotely. We also use deterrents. So one of the things we do is if one of our cameras, outdoor cameras, spots a person, because we have person detection, essentially, a third party can tap into our APIs and be able to turn on a light. So if you're away on vacation, you know, Nest Cam outdoor spots a person, they're walking up into your yard, you know, we can actually do a deterrent and turn on the light just based on that. We also have just Home and Away Assist that if you're gone for over 24 hours, we'll randomly turn on lights to simulate what we call mockupancy, right? It's just mocking that you're actually home. So pretty kind of cool, you know, integrations and user benefits that we allow developers to do based on our ecosystem and APIs.
I love the word mockupancy. That's a great word. So I have a Nest Cam IQ outdoor Nest Cam, as we talked about before, and it does have the feature, and you know it recognizes when my kids come in. You know, when I first set it up, it said, you know, unrecognized face, and then I could say yes. Yes, that person is allowed in, and no, that person isn't. So, what happens to those photos? I noticed. I was almost thinking, well, you know, it's a Google-owned company. It's probably going to start bringing up my photos because it knows all my kids, including, you know, their faces, and can tell apart my identical twins when my friends and family can't. What happens to those photos? What can you tell us about privacy of those photos? What can you tell us about that?
Right now, they're just stored in isolation. And again, Nest, for all intents and purposes, has been run as a separate company. We do, you know, had a policy of not sharing any of that data. Of course, during the merger, we're becoming one company. So we're actually working through kind of all the privacy policies as it relates and being transparent back to the consumer of how your Nest photos of the past, or not just photos, but kind of security, will be transitioned into the merged company. So that's kind of coming forward. But, you know, I think we've brainstormed out a lot of what we can do by analyzing photos, not personally, not by having people look at them, but having algorithms, again, look for patterns is really the key. When we really talk about the future of the connected home, we and by the way, we tend not to like to use smart home. That tends to infer that you're controlling it with your smartphone. And I think what we're really moving towards is a thoughtful home experience, one that cares about you, your family, the people inside it as an invited guest, allowing us to automate on your behalf thoughtfully. And so we want to kind of be able to do that. But in order to do that, we need data. So it's really a social contract. It's an invitation. Consumers can choose to share data with us or not. If they do, we're hoping to provide really the convenience of the benefit of being able to do a level of automation that's really going to be unparalleled. So we don't have anything to announce yet, but you can just kind of see that the more data we get, the better. But there are security, privacy concerns. We have a policy of being very transparent about what we collect, what we do with it, and then always, always enable the consumer to turn it off at any given time. And so it's just, that's how we look at data, how we are kind of looking towards, you know, the future of what we can provide for the consumer.
So I bet when you tell people what you do in your regular life, they probably ask you all about the connected home, which I do prefer the connected home to the smart home. What do you tell people like when they're just like, I want my home to be connected, but I don't know where to start? What do you usually tell people?
You know, that's a really good question. And my question back to them is, what's your pain point? And, you know, usually, again, there's categories. So is it about saving energy or reducing your heating bill? If that's the case, start with a thermostat. If it's entertainment, a Chromecast is a great place to start. A voice assistant is actually also a great entry point. You know, with the Google Mini, you can get in for under $50 and you have the beginning of using voice, not just for search, but that can be something that can be expanded upon. There's actually a survey or there's a study out there, a retail study, of 45% of Google Home queries are to control devices in the home. So consumers essentially want to use their voice for home automation to turn on lights, to turn it off, to set the thermostat. It's just another interface that's just as easy as either walking up to a light switch, but it's much easier when you're in bed, right, to just say turn off the lights or, you know, turn up the heat. So voice is a great place to start. But really, at the end of the day, it's around solving a particular pain point that a consumer has. And you can look at safety, where Nest Secure is a great safety and security, Nest Secure or our Nest Protect. If it's around entertainment, again, Google Chromecast. If it's about Wi-Fi, Wi-Fi and reliability is huge. And Google Wi-Fi is a great solution because it now introduces Wi-Fi mesh to really cover all the nooks and crannies of the home to be sure that you have good Wi-Fi. And that's really important when you do talk about connected devices, to be sure that they're always online and they're not dropping off and you don't have that latency issue. So from my perspective, it's always about if we can provide the consumer with a great entry experience around a pain point that they're having. For instance, Nest Hello is our doorbell camera. And if you pair that with a Google Mini, which is our voice assistant, when somebody rings the doorbell, it does what we call visitor announce.
Someone's out the door.
Exactly.
Your mom is out the door.
Well, and it'll tell you who if you have that feature turned on, right? And, you know, so if you have Chromecast, you can then say, you know, Chromecast, show me the door. And it'll actually, if you're watching TV, you'll be able to see who's at the door. So you can begin to see how all these products are going to start working together at such a degree. I always kind of look at it, this as an evolutionary. Last 3 or 4 years about individual product discovery, you know, using your smartphone to control things. Now we're moving into cross-product integration where they're going to work better together. And then starting to use voice as another interface. And then the seamless experience around mostly solutions. Not the entire whole home, but whether you're talking about doorman, security, safety, entertainment, there's kind of like 2 or 3 or 4 products working in that solution category. Really, you know, it provides a great experience to build on.
So I actually have I mean, I pretty much have the whole Nest ecosystem, I should just say it, embedded throughout my house, both mix of personal and professional reasons. But so I've been able to experience kind of this whole like ecosystem the way it's supposed to work. And when people come over, they're really into it. But the one thing they ask me is, how much does this all cost? And I think the big one of the big barriers for some people out there, in particular with the connected home, is that sort of that annual monthly upkeep. Is there any, you know, any talks around the Nest buildings about possibly, you know, maybe like a free tier that offers one, you know, one person who has identifiable through the security cameras or something of the sort to sort of to help newcomers feel like that's something that is available to them?
Yeah, I think there's a couple things to note. It's funny that we're talking about pricing because I am at the Cedia trade show, which is in San Diego right now. And this is a custom installer trade show. This has been an industry for the last 30 years where they do essentially $10,000 to $100,000 installs of home entertainment and security and connected home installations. And in some respects, this has come so affordable. But I do understand for us to really hit mainstream, that price is a big issue. And we're really heading towards economies of scale here. So to your point, I think as technology grows, you get, you know, broader adoption. Pricing is constantly being analyzed and essentially looked at, both in creating less expensive products as well as looking at services that could be essentially bundled at a less expensive price. So my overall thought is that you're going to over the next, you know, tough to predict, but, you know, over the next couple of years, certainly you're going to start to see prices come down as more adoption occurs. So just like any industry, economies of scale will start to play into this. But there are true hard costs, if you think about it, for companies like Google, of having to stream video across a bandwidth and store it. And it's surprisingly more expensive than people think. But I do understand that, you know, for us to reach mainstream adoption, prices do need to come down.
And I don't like, I love things that are free, don't get me wrong, but it is slightly comforting that I pay for the subscription that has the facial recognition. It's a small comfort because, you know, as tech people, we always question, like, why is the service free? What are they doing? You know, that sort of thing. So I appreciated your answer about the companies being separate, but it is also something that we should all keep in mind, like you said, that there's a cost to these things.
Right.
Is there any, so I, again, because I've got all these things in my house, I do have the nicely designed motion sensors, for instance, the entry sensors, which doubles motion sensors as well, very nicely designed. But I'm kind of, you know, part of the thing that is kind of a bummer is if I take out the Nest Secure for some reason, I have to install like the Nest, what's it called, the Nest Connect, which has the spec in it. Is there maybe a future where we don't have to rely on these little median points that have to connect us all, maybe a future where just the chip isn't everything?
No, it's a really good point. One of the philosophies that Nest has had from day one is that you shouldn't have to buy a hub, another piece of hardware that just sits there and does interoperability between the different protocols and different devices that you've had. So even when we built the Nest Learning Thermostat from day one, we actually overbuilt it. It has seven different sensors in it. It's got Wi-Fi. It's got an 802.15.4 chip in it that runs Thread and Weave. It's got the Bluetooth for onboard. I mean, it's actually overbuilt in many different ways. But to your point, when it does come to, you know, Thread and Weave devices currently, the lock needs to have some sort of medium device in order to interop and convert that communication signal essentially to the cloud that can be controlled remotely. So I think you're going to find over time, we don't have anything to announce today, that all of these little kinks, if you will be worked out to where it should be seamless. We still hold true to the philosophy that you shouldn't have to have another piece of hardware just to act as that hub. And, you know, we believe that in the long term, we'll be able to solve for that.
Mike, thank you so much for joining us. Mike Soucy is a senior product marketing manager at Google with Nest. Thanks for taking the time. I mean, I know you're at a conference, so we want to let you get back to that. Where's the best place for people to go if they like what you they've heard from you and they want to learn more about all the stuff that you've talked about?
Yeah, sure. It's been a pleasure to be with you. Again, follow the show. Real big fan here. So I appreciate being a guest finally. So that's awesome. As far as learning more about our products, nest.com, of course. And then you can go to home.google.com and find out about all of our products. And then stay tuned for more information as we join forces.
Thank you so much, Mike, for also a little bit of teasing. Really appreciate that. Now we have lots of stuff to look forward to. I think it's going to be a really busy winter, I'm hearing.
So. Keep smiling. I appreciate
all right.
it. Take care.
Thank you.
Thank Bye-bye. You. We are going to talk to Stacey Higginbotham about all the fragmentation, frustration, all the standards out there, and whether the newest one will be useful to us. But first, I want to thank the sponsor of Know How, IT Pro TV. Now, if you are watching this right now, and obviously you are, maybe you're just listening, you like to be taught things about technology, and that is what IT Pro TV does. They're like us, but more technical and more designed for people who want to get jobs in this field. I don't know if you've read this recent survey, but there was a survey about how many companies will hire you without a college degree, and many more, like Google, Apple. They don't require college degrees anymore. They are looking for candidates who have hands-on experience through coding boot camps or industry-related training like IT Pro TV. So that is what they're looking for. From CompTIA and Cisco to EC Council and VMware, IT Pro TV has you covered with everything you need to launch or to grow your career. CompTIA recently named IT Pro TV as its official video training partner. They have over 4,000 hours of binge-worthy on-demand training. New content is added daily. Courses are conveniently listed by category, certification, and job role. Stream IT Pro TV's courses live and on demand worldwide. You can use your Chromecast, your Roku, your Amazon Fire TV, your Apple TV, your PC, or you can use their recently updated iOS and Android apps. If you manage a team, IT Pro TV offers flexible online training for IT teams of all sizes. Keep your team's skills up to date with interactive training that they will actually enjoy watching. They have engaging hosts presenting information in a talk show format. You'll have full control over your team's training schedule, and you can track your team's results via IT Pro TV's Pro Portal. You can see metrics like logins, viewing time, courses viewed. You can see what tracks your employees have completed, and more. Now, September 18th, I don't know if you knew this, but September 18th is National IT Professionals Day. I'm looking forward to it. I hope that someone will make a cake for all the IT professionals in your life. Celebrate with an IT Pro TV subscription, even better than cake, and join the more than 100,000 IT Pro TV members today. All you have to do is visit itpro.tv/knowhow to learn more about IT Pro TV's team solution and to request a free team trial. Or you can sign up for an individual monthly membership, and you'll get a free 7-day trial at itpro.tv/knowhow. Use the code KNOWHOW30, and then you'll get 30% off your subscription for the lifetime of your active subscription. Standard subscriptions are normally $570 a year, but you will pay only $399 when you go to itpro.tv/knowhow and use the code KNOWHOW30. Flexible training, binge-worthy content, life-changing results. And we thank IT Pro TV for supporting this episode of Know How. So one of the biggest hurdles, as we've been discussing this episode, the biggest hurdles for IoT is interoperability, or what Flo and I like to call Flo's fragmentation, frustration.
Yes.
It's not just hers. It's everybody's. But she has a name that starts with F, so it's good.
It works.
It's not just about what works or more often what doesn't work, but it's also about security.
Mm-hmm.
And so we wanted to invite back friend of the show, Stacey Higginbotham, because she has reported about the new standard that's going to change and everything. Right, Stacey? Welcome back.
Or nothing. I don't know.
Or nothing. So tell us what was announced this week with IoTivity.
Yes.
2.0.
Sure. So this was actually last week, but the Open Connectivity Foundation, and I always call it the wrong acronym, so if I do that, I'm so sorry. But the Open Connectivity Foundation has been working on this standard for a really long time, like since 2015. And they announced version 2. We thought this was going to be available actually way earlier, like right after CES, like a few months after, but it didn't. The big things about this release, the goal of IoTivity is to get rid of all the hubs. It's so every device in your home has a set of properties associated with it. So a light bulb will be like, I'm a light bulb. I can turn on. I can turn off. I can dim. I have the following colors. And every single other device in the home that wants that information can just access it and be like, oh, if I need to, I can turn on this light bulb by talking to it in this way. Right now, that's not how things work. Right now, you have to call, like, for each individual type of light bulb, you have to call, like, different APIs, and you're like, oh, I'm going to call Philips Hue and ask them to turn on these lights. I'm going to call Lutron and ask it to turn on these lights. And that's a pain, and it makes life so hard for anybody building a product that wants to work with other products. So that's their goal.
So we're not even really talking about my frustration, which is like I want my Echo Show to work with my Nest Cam. We're talking about from the people that are building these tools.
Yes.
Yes. The idea is that you could actually pick a device that was OCF certified or IoTivity certified, and you'd be like, oh, this totally works with this other thing that also has this standard. But it's not actually how it's going to work. There's some basics there, but there are going to be different layers on top. So not everything is going to work. A good example would be something like your light bulb. They may say, like, it works. And it does. It'll turn on and off. But you can't use, like, cool color recipes or things like that. For that, you're going to have to go back to the apps and the APIs.
So we're not getting rid of our hubs, is what you're saying.
It's unlikely. And the other thing is, I'm not sure how many people want to use this. So they talked about LG, Haier, Samsung, and one other company I can't recall right now, deciding to put out products in 2019 that use this standard. I think we'll see them. I don't know if they're going to extend that across the line, if we're going to see a lot of other things. One of the problems with the standard was up until now, they really focused on big devices like gateways. Mm-hmm. And a lot of things like light bulbs or refrigerators, they don't have super memory. They don't have super processing power. So they're going to be using something called IoTivity Lite. And so that's not directly compatible in all ways with just normal IoTivity. Ah, it's already starting.
I'm like, my blood is already starting to boil a little bit. I also was noticed in your write-up, by the way, on your website, StacyOnIoT.com. Go visit it. And that's Stacy with an E, by the way, for those who are listening just to the audio, is the fact that a lot of these companies, it feels like we're being forced to be locked into a certain ecosystem. And it's like, well, why would we allow everybody to play nice? Because that would add more competition.
That would totally destroy our revenue model, which is to get you to buy all of our stuff.
Right. Right. I mean, it works for Apple. Sorry, Megan.
It does. That everyone has taken a page. They're like, well, Apple can do this in hardware. Yeah. Why can't we?
You just have to tell everyone that you're more secure and don't ask too many questions.
I mean, it's a shame because there is so much promise in devices actually having interoperability. If you think about the things you could be able to do, like you could just tell Amazon, be like, hey, Madam A, could you set it up so when someone comes to my front door after dark, turn on the porch light?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's something that could theoretically be possible if everyone used the same standards, because you'd only have to write these things once. But now it's not happening. And it may one day happen, but it's not happening now.
You have to find a third-party app. You have to, maybe if you're really experienced, you'll throw in some Android apps that let you do some special things in there, like a Tasker app to do some stuff, but it is not easy. And, like, trying to sell work on this stuff sometimes is hard, too, because there's no exact standard for IoT, so you can't just say, go do A, B, and C, and you can do D. It's like, would you like to do A? Would you like to do B? Would you like to do X?
And if X happens, would you like it to do A or B, but only between the hours of this time and that time? And like the one, and I've done this for a couple things, but being forced to think about all this, that is, no normal person wants to do that.
It's no. True. We are not normal people.
Which is why, isn't that why now they're building this stuff into like new houses so that people, like you're just walking into an ecosystem, you're buying a house and now you buy an ecosystem too. It's like, here you go.
See, that terrifies me.
Yes.
KB Homes today said that they were actually going to put Google Assistant in their homes, which on one hand you're like, yay, someone's going to help me do all this. And on the other hand, you're like, I'm an Apple person. I don't want Google Home or I love Madam A. Mm-hmm. Aye.
So you, in your piece, you kind of explained that the reason this happened is that when device makers of this, you know, connected home stuff started making the devices, they looked at the mobile industry and said, okay, well, it works. It works with Apple, like it works, you know, with Android. And so why don't I make it work with the toothbrush and the light bulb and the lock and the coffee maker? But it's not working that way.
It's not, but they have high hopes of what you're seeing. Actually, is things like Amazon's Echo, Madam A, and Google becoming standards in and of themselves. And what they are doing is they're doing it via native support of, native skills in their digital assistants. So things like when you connect your thermostat to an Amazon Echo, for example, the Amazon Echo has a native skill that understands what a thermostat is. And now it has, you know, locks, it has video doorbells, it has ovens even. So we're seeing that happen in those two ecosystems. So you might one day be forced to choose between Amazon and Google here. So yay, that would be better than kind of what we have now. So, I mean, and it's very true. Standards efforts don't really work out. I mean, there's Wi-Fi and maybe Bluetooth. I mean, I can't think of a lot of others. The rest are usually set by industries, and the winner gets to set them. And that's where we are right now.
I thought the winner was like Zigbee at this point in terms of...
Zigbee is not as friendly as you might think. Like when I bring my Zigbee devices with the Echo Plus, which has Zigbee, not all of them work.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you found that out when you got the Echo Plus. Mm-hmm. I warned you about that. It's kind of...
Yeah, Zigbee is actually a nightmare standard because they try to be too many things to too many people, and now you've got many versions of Zigbee.
Yeah.
And so what, I mean, that, and they're over-promising, too, because the promise, the whole promise of the Echo Plus was you can just say, you know, Madam A, find all my devices. And that has not worked out.
Sure, I'll do it for you. I'm your assistant.
But, yeah, I mean, she'll find a couple of things as long as, and even she admits that some of it is not, well, if you have locks or if you have lights, you have to do it separately.
And some of that is a function of security, but some of it is a function of just crazy competing standards. Mm-hmm. Or, I mean, Zigbee has Zigbee Lightlink. They had Zigbee Home Automation versions 1, 2, I think, maybe 3. They had a special Zigbee for like power companies. I mean, it's not great.
So the security is, that's a good question. I'm glad you brought that up because a standard would help improve security, correct?
Maybe. I mean, the theory.
No, this is important. I mean, I'm glad we're getting these live reactions because.
The theory is that, you know, if you had a standard that was open source and people could test against it and put things, then yes, you would. People would say, oh, hey, by the way, you guys, this is totally broken. We should fix this. The thing with IoT and actually IoTivity, one of the reasons the 2.0 standard was delayed is because they were working on the security aspects of it. And I will say that they did some stuff with public key encryption that is good, but they also only handle security at the device level. So they don't handle all the other aspects of security associated with IoT devices. So they don't do what they recommend. You encrypt your traffic from device to hub and then hub to cloud, but they don't enforce that. They recommend you don't like store your data on a unsecured Amazon instance, for example. But, you know, they don't enforce that. So a standard is only going to go so far when it comes to things like security, because that's super complex. But it would help because it gives you, it gives everybody the same set of tools to work with and test against.
So, Stacey, like, is there any advice? I mean, what kind of advice should we be giving as the people who are telling people about these devices and these ecosystems? Like, what should Megan and I mean, what's the advice you give people about this?
Sure. This is, so I, you're like, what? Why?
Tell us what to tell people.
Empower us with information.
I always ask people what they want to do. Right now, you cannot buy a smart home. You really just cannot. So, and if you have, you're just like, I just want to test it out, then I tell people to just test it out with lights because it's pretty low risk, pretty high return.
Just like I do with my mom, by the way.
Yeah. See?
She loves it. She loves having a different colored light. Like, that just makes her happy. She can change it from blue to green like that. Mm-hmm. It's magic. Anyway.
See? No. And that gets into all kinds of fun things because you could have her set up an if this and that recipe for, or an applet, sorry, for like, hey, when the weather gets below freezing, turn blue.
Yeah.
And then she'll be like, ooh.
Yeah.
we do stuff like that. And with lights, I ask them usually, hey, do you have a digital assistant? So are you already in on, you know, Madam A or Google or HomeKit? And I don't tend to recommend HomeKit because it's so much more expensive, all the devices are. But if someone's like, I am a diehard Apple person and I really want to stick with that, then I will. But otherwise, if they have nothing, I used to steer them towards Madam A, but now I'm actually steering them towards Google because I think the assistant is much better.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, then I'm like, hey, get a Google Mini, get a couple bulbs that work with it. You're done. If they have a different use case, then, you know, I help them try to solve their use case. But there's no, like, one size fits all.
Yeah, and then Google is good, too. I mean, Amazon and Google share this, that, like, many people who use Apple and Android use both. Like, many people who use Apple use Gmail or Google Photos. Or, you know, there's a lot of crossover there. So when I've used the Google Assistant, there are a lot of things that it can do for me, even though I'm, you know, 75% Apple.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. I'm just stuck in the Google land.
That's okay.
I love the Google for me. It's great. And, you know, the nice thing is both of those have a much more open ecosystem and a better assistant than Apple does right now. Apple. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I guess we have to wait. So the standard isn't, what you're saying is a standard isn't necessarily the panacea to all of our problems.
I think if it were executed properly and people actually bought into it, yes. But I don't think we're going to see a lot of these products. And it's not like, I would look for this. When Apple or Google or Amazon sign up to participate with IoTivity, then we can be like, oh, now it's getting good.
Mm-hmm. Apple signed up with Thread.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on the Thread group?
We actually just talked to Google about Google Thread. So
Thread is a wireless protocol. So it's like a layer underneath. This is IoTivity up here. It's more application layer. Mm-hmm. And Thread is down here at the wireless protocol layer. So, yay. And Thread is actually built on the same. So you can do a couple things. What's interesting about Apple joining was that Thread originally was built on the same radio, like IEEE standard, as Zigbee. 802, I always forget, 802.15.4. And so what happens is, up until now, Bluetooth or Apple with HomeKit has only used Bluetooth and Wi-Fi. So you could actually run Thread over Bluetooth. And I've talked to people who are like, yeah, we could run Thread over Wi-Fi if we wanted to. So it's either that Apple's going to be more excited about Zigbee, or Apple's just going to be like, yeah, I'm going to run Thread over Bluetooth. So it would be cool if they opened up to Zigbee, because that there's a lot of sensors out there that you can't use right now with HomeKit, because their Wi-Fi sucks batteries and Bluetooth is not super awesome yet as a mesh network.
We are still at the beginning of this. I thought that we were at least in the middle of it. I was wrong. Mm-hmm. We are still at the beginning.
So beginning. And you know what? We're going to notice it. Like, we're going to have our iPhone moment, I think, when we can start talking to our devices, like talking to our digital assistants and telling them what to do, and it just happens. I thought it would be when they like started proactively telling you about things, but I don't think that's anywhere near.
No, because anything can tell you about anything. I mean, I can get a notification. That's the way I feel. Like, you can just have a voice talk to you based on whatever notification you're already getting on your phone, for instance. That's kind of how I think about it.
Yeah, that would be terrible.
Yeah, well, it already tells me when there's someone at the door.
So. Yeah. I mean, and they are a little smarter. I mean, my Nest doorbell's like, oh, I saw your husband at the door. Mm-hmm. Or I saw an unknown person. So, you know, that's getting a little bit better.
Or UPS guy, as I put him in there, but it reads it as Ups guy.
Oh, that's cute. It's the Ups guy. Yeah.
It's the only up. Anyway.
Well, Stacey, thank you so much for taking the time to explain the inexplicable to us once again. Stacey on IoT, subscribe to her podcast, go to her website.
She has a newsletter as well, which I also subscribe to. Great way to keep in touch with everything going on Stacey's website.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, This Week in Google.
Yes, here on Twit Network.
Thanks so much. Have a great day.
Thank you, Stacey.
Hey. Bye.
We have more IoT goodness on the way, but first I want to take a minute to thank our sponsor, Ring. You know, you've heard us talking about Ring. We talk about it all the time for a good reason, because they are a great doorbell camera and they've been around. My parents have a Ring and they love it, and I also love it because it just gives me a sense of security that they're okay because they have this device. It's also keeps me from going in and stealing things from their house, which I would never do, of course, Mom and Dad. Let me tell you a little bit about Ring. They've sort of reinvented the alarm system. Traditional alarm companies prioritized high monthly payments, and they tie you into long-term contracts. And Ring doesn't do that. It's easy to install. It's affordable. And there are no long-term contracts. It's home security without all of that, those contracts that were annoying before. You can build the system that's right for your home and have it up and running in minutes. The Ring Alarm Security Kit comes with everything you need to protect your home with 24/7 professional monitoring, and it's only $10 a month. And that includes the base station that keeps your alarm system online and connected to mobile devices, the keypad arms and disarms your alarm system, the contact sensor that lets you know when doors or windows are open, the motion detector, it detects motion inside your home, and range extender that extends the signal from your base station. And we showed the Ring alarm in our episode about security, and they're really great products. Like all of Ring products, they're nice. They have a really loud alarm for you, and just super easy to set up. And it's a smarter way to protect your entire home. The Ring Alarm Security Kit is available at ring.com, and you can just walk right into a store anywhere in the U.S. and buy it, because it's there too. You've probably seen them and wondered, and I'm telling you that it is worth the purchase. And if you want to help out our podcast, you can go to ring.com/knowhow, and then you can learn how to get the whole home security kit for only $10 per month. You get whole home security. That's for your whole home. No long-term contracts. You're not signing away anything. It's only $10 a month. So do that. Go to ring.com/knowhow and then have one system that's protecting you from everyone and everything, including your daughter, who was just going to have a couple friends over. Mom, not that many, but then, you know, they can see me. So we thank Ring for their support of Know How. Well, Stacey talked about sensors. We've been trying out some sensors.
Hold on. I'm feeling a little depressed after that conversation.
Buck up, camper.
I know. It's just, we're trying to talk about fragmentation today. And
you just have to, I think, be zen about it and just accept that you're going to have all the devices They're going to work sometimes.
We're going to be first, though. We're the first ones on it.
Yeah, we are.
We're setting the trend. Mm-hmm. All right, let's set the trends with some more accessories,
Okay, so you tried out the kangaroo motion
sensor. I did.
Sensor.
Look what I brought. I brought some things. This is the kangaroo motion sensor. This is the kangaroo motion sensor. the thing about this motion sensor is it is, we were talking about standards and how you have to like have a hub to connect sensors and some bulbs and how annoying that is. You don't need that with this. This is all just completely on its own, hooks up via Bluetooth, I believe. And let me explain to you how this works because it's a little different than your typical motion sensor. So Kangaroo, really, from what I'm understanding, the brand is heykangaroo.com. So from what I'm really understanding, this brand wants to be like the easy, you buy the device, it's only $30. That's like low barrier to entry. You buy the device, you literally just pair it to your phone and stick it on the wall and boom, you've got professional monitoring right there. And the Kangaroo, so what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna actually put this down here. So if, if you would like to be my hand model.
Oh, I would love to be your hand model.
While I explain this. So Kangaroo, if you go to heykangaroo.com, they have pricing. So you can pay yearly or monthly. Monthly, $1 a month for self-monitoring, which includes like push notifications and a really easy button to connect you to 911. Or you can get pro monitoring for $9 a month, which is like super cheap compared to some of the other big kahuna systems out there. And that includes 24/7 pro monitoring, which I haven't tried yet because remember, I have had quite an experience with these things in the past. So I'm kind of waiting to get a hang of it before we go into there. But so what I have here is the app. I'm going to get the app over here and let me turn down the brightness so that we do not blow it out on the screen. We're going to put it over here.
Over there.
We're going to put it over here. We're going to put it like this. Yeah. There we go. So this is the app. As you can see here, there are three buttons on the bottom. So this is the main home screen. You can slide to arm it. And when it's armed, you will actually get a phone call or a text message if it detects motion in addition to a push notification. And so actually the interesting thing about this, which I should have led off with, but I didn't and I apologize, is that you sign up for this with your phone number. So it's like signing up for WhatsApp or Google Allo, except you're not getting a messaging service, you're getting home security. And let me tell you, the minute I signed up for an account, I did not register these devices quickly because my Pixel 2 has problems connecting. I just have problems setting up IoT with that version of Android for whatever reason, which is why I was using the Samsung phone. So, okay, I hopped on there. I didn't get anything set up. I decided to put down. I got a phone call like an hour later from an 888 number, so a toll-free number. And it was Kangaroo calling me, their customer service, asking if I had any problems setting things up. So I was like, you know what? This is part of the experience. I won't just, you know, angrily hang up on them because I don't like talking to people. So I decided to stay on the line and go, okay, well, let me tell you, it wasn't working with my Pixel. So the fellow on the other end gave me a couple of ideas. He told me how to hard reset it. So I did hold down there's a button on the side, actually, Alex, very quickly, if you wouldn't mind. I can show you there's a button right here. Very teeny tiny little hole. You would stick a pin or an earring in there or a SIM key and push it down for 10 seconds to reset it. And so I did that with my Chromebook. So I ended up pairing it with my Chromebook for a second. He called back. He said he'd call me back in 15 minutes. He did. And he was just on the phone with me, making sure that I got the product hooked up. So they really want to be like the easy to set up. We're here for you. So Alex, if you don't mind very quickly going over the headshot, when you click on this button over here, you will get instant access. They'll call you. So you can just... Oh, my phone number's on there. We'll blow that out. Don't call me, please. That's my bad. Message support team or visit FAQ. And then you've got some easy settings, but I haven't set up professional monitoring yet, so I can't speak to that just yet. But
that's pretty good.
I mean, $30, a dollar a month or $12 a year if you want to self-monitor, and they'll call you if you have problems.
I love it. Okay, you want to see my sensor?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do.
Right, my sensor is for those of us who've just given up and decided you're all in on the Apple, because it's by Eve, which only works on iOS, doesn't work on any other platforms. Eve, Elgato.
Yes, Elgato. And they used to make a lot of accessories for Apple users back. Yeah, they used to.
They still do make, like, you know, stands. Docks and stuff. But they also make a whole suite of.
Okay, so it's
IoT
called
tools.
Eve.
Eve.
Okay.
Yes, and it's your Eve Home. And so you do have the Eve Home app, but it also works with HomeKit. So you can do both. But that is a little bit confusing, like, as Stacey said, because there are things, like, on this motion sensor, you can adjust the sensitivity. So it's more or less sensitive. And then, but you can't do that in HomeKit. You have to go to the Eve app. So it's
fragmentation, frustration.
This is just a motion sensor that you can get an alert. Like, I get alerts on text messages.
That's the same with the kangaroo.
Yeah, I get HomeKit alerts, not text messages, on my watch or my phone if someone is moving around, and you can set it to just if they're moving around.
Well, that's kind of, I mean, that's nice. You could put it, like, in an area maybe where Gilbert shouldn't be and find out if Gilbert's sniffing around where he shouldn't. I did that with the cat.
And it's a great, it's great for people who don't like cameras in their homes either.
Yes.
If you just want to know if someone's home when they shouldn't be, or someone is in your house when they shouldn't be. So you can also set it to do fun things. So HomeKit has automation. So you could set it to, like, oh, well, when someone comes in, it's going to turn the light purple or something like that. Or, you know, practical things too. Turns the light on when you come in. You know, we have... We have that in our home in regular lights, not in our smart home lights. So let me show you what it looks like in HomeKit. Is that the right way?
Again, the interface. Every time I see HomeKit, I'm like, it's just so nice.
It
you have that nice background.
I know.
Sorry, Google Home app, but
so I can set it to, let's see the automation that I have. The motion detected in Twit.
I want to turn on the brightness just a smidgen for our current audience.
There we go. So how's that?
Perfect.
Then we let's set an automation. Here's how you do it. So I can set an automation with when a sensor detects something. So I could do people arrive, people leave, time of day. This is just all HomeKit. But when a sensor detects something. So then I have one sensor connected
in
HomeKit.
Easy.
And then I just do that. And then I hit next. And then when it detects motion or when it stops detecting motion, I can do, let's say when it detects motion. And then I can set it to do all these things. So these are all the scenes that I have with our Nano Leaf that we showed last week. So
inner peace and blah, blah, blah.
Yes. So if I want to have my Nano Leaf crazy lights go on, I could do that. If I wanted to when someone passes... then the front door unlocks. So if I wanted to invite everybody over to my house, all you guys watching this, I could just set the sensor, and then when someone passes by the sensor...
the door unlocks.
Yeah, the front door would unlock, and then you guys could come over, but I'm not going to do that. So I'm going to do Twit John, the light that is John that we have here, and I'm going to have it turn off. So now I'm going to have it turn on. So I'm going to test this automation. So here, this is the light. So it's a nice day for a live demo, isn't it? Test
it's a
this
nice
automation.
Day for
and it turned on.
It's because you sang Billy Idol.
It is. So ideally, then, when if I turn that.
Oh, I kind of like us with this blue light.
It is
actually.
Nice.
We look nice.
So I hit done, and then it saves that. And let me turn it off. I could say... turn off.
You wouldn't like it.
Whoa.
Turn off John.
Okay, the John is off.
The John is off!
And then hopefully when I... it's clearly not working because it would have...
is the Wi-Fi situation?
Then...
let's pretend
it
works.
Then it would go on. Magically. Turn on John. Turn on John.
Okay, the John is on.
And it works. So if I, let's, as long as we are here, we'll try to do a little troubleshooting why this isn't working. Besides just that the connected home is not ready. Let's see. Eve motion. It says it's here. The sensitivity is high. The duration is 2 minutes. Oh, LED on motion. Then I think, see, this is what I'm talking about. This is the Eve app, not the HomeKit app. There we go. And I think let's just say it's going to turn on in 5 seconds. So let's see if it turns on. It worked!
Hallelujah!
All right.
Hallelujah!
Now that that worked, I think I'm not going to try to make anything else work.
No,
I think we've reached the end.
Yeah, we have. Let's stop it here while we still have something.
Two more weeks left. Only 2 more weeks of IoT magic. So subscribe to get your 2 more weeks. And then if you're subscribed, then you'll get Jason, who's coming after with his own secret 12 weeks of know-how on something different than IoT. So subscribe now, twit.tv/KH.
Mm-hmm. That's the know-how, not Kingdom Hearts.
You can watch live 11 a.m. Thursdays, 11 a.m. Pacific Thursdays at twit.tv/live. You can join us in the chat room at irc.twit.tv. You can join our Google Plus group. Mm-hmm. Just search know-how for the Google Plus group. I'm always approving people, so I know there's a lot of people. And a lot of people asking questions about what we're doing and also asking questions about what has been done for the many years in past. And if you want to find out answers to your questions about, turning a Raspberry Pi into...
an actual pie.
into baking a pie with a Raspberry Pi, go to the Google Plus. Find the Kitas, the know-it-alls, and they will answer those questions for you. But I am Megan Maroney on Twitter.
And I'm... Oh, that flow on Twitter.
And we'll see you next week on Know How.
Until next week!